Closer, the Entrepreneur's Circle.
Hey, I'm so glad you're here because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at On Air Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automagically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at eric@onairbrands.com so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Welcome back, folks, to another episode of the Entrepreneur Circle. I am your most happy and humbled host, Eric Abral. As usual, I have an amazing individual with me in the room that I am so inspired by. I love our conversations. We're in the room together whenever we're in the room together. And it's only been a short period of time, but I feel like I've known you a lifetime. But first, I want to welcome Aaron Bradley to the show.
Eric, thank you so much for having me. And I agree with that sentiment. I met you and I was like, ooh, this could be a friend for life. Yeah. We've got a lot in common. This is going to be fun.
I feel like we've literally probably met 2 weeks ago and had a couple conversations in groups, like other people present, never one-on-one like this. And, you know, we were just on the phone together, FaceTiming. And I felt like you were my best friend for like ever. Like we already knew each other. It's so cool.
It's that East Coast connection,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, very true. Very true. But for those who don't know, I want to give them a primer for who you are before we jump into it. So Erin's the founder of Pursuing Freedom. She has a podcast of the same name, which I highly recommend you go check out. It's a platform dedicated to inspiring and educating individuals on their journey to success and happiness. She's a firm believer of doing everything that you can to have it all. She's passionate about helping you create multiple streams of income, achieving financial freedom, loving what you do, and not compromising your time, health, or your relationships in that process. So again, I just want to welcome you, and I'm super excited to dive in with you.
Me too. Let's do it. I'm excited.
So let's get into the first segment of the show, which is the eureka moment in your life or business that caused a major change or pivot.
Okay, so I was thinking about this. There's been a few for sure because I'm, you know, getting up there in age. But I think one of the biggest turning points in my life was I'm the youngest of five kids and from Philadelphia originally, and I was the third in a row to go to Boston College. All five of us, we all studied business, you know, finance majors, marketing majors, operations management, et cetera. My dad was a stockbroker and financial planner in Philadelphia. And as I was graduating college, my older sister, who was she's 8 years older than me, she had graduated from University of Virginia, had some really great jobs in the corporate world with Morgan Stanley and other big companies in New York City, DC. And she was doing really well in business and financial, climbing the corporate ladder. And I think there was always just an assumption I would do the same because that's what all my siblings did. They graduated, they got good jobs and off to the races, you know, trying to make a good living and have a great life. And as I was graduating college, she was having her first child and she decided to leave the corporate world and stay home with him. And so as a young buck, I thought to myself, well, I don't know what my path has in store for me. You know, am I going to be a stay-at-home mom after I work a long time in the corporate world? Or, you know, I had no idea at that time that I would end up being an entrepreneur as I am today. But I thought to myself, well, if that is my path, then I have this little window here where I can be selfish. You know, up until now, I've been sort of beholden to my parents and their hopes and dreams for me and wanting to be a good kid, you know? And then it's like you go into the job world and now you're beholden to the job. And if you end up in a relationship, you know, you're going to make sacrifices in that relationship. And so I saw this little window of time to be selfish, if you will, and decided I wanted to travel. I had studied abroad in college and I wanted to get back over to Europe. So I told my parents that I was going to travel before I got a real job, a quote unquote real job, right? And that led me to getting a job at Outback Steakhouse right out of college. I think it was much to their chagrin, but I got a job waiting tables so I could save money for my travels. And then I ended up kayaking the coast of Mexico for a month with no civilization, with National Outdoor Leadership School, NOLS, if you've ever heard of it. And then the day before I left for that, I found a 1 month course in Barcelona to get certified to teach English as a second language. So I paid for that. And I was literally leaving to go out into the wilderness with 15 strangers. And I tell my parents, when I get back, I'm just going to bust my butt and wait more tables and bartend and save more money. And then I'm going to Barcelona. And the month in Barcelona led to 2 years off and on, making about $11,000 a year cash under the table, running out of cash every single month, and always having enough money for wine. I don't know why, but it was a good time. And it was the beginning of the unconventional, right? And the path just kind of started to unfold with the philosophy of, you know, why not? And if not now, when? And so ridiculous pipe dreams became why not now and became reality, you know, faster as I continue to play with the game of life. And it's been a winding road since then, but a lot of fun along the way. And it just kind of challenges me to continue to explore what's next. And then more importantly, help others to unlock the belief that they too can do whatever they choose. And and why not, you know? So, you know, why not us and why not now, yeah. Right? So it's,
I'm so curious because like you said, it's an unconventional method, a different way to think than most. What was the challenge coming home for you in terms of, you know, going to the barbecues, going to the family events? Was there like hesitation or fear around like, people are going to be asking me questions. They're going to judge me. Did you have that in you at all? Or were you like, I don't care what people think. I'm just living my life and having fun and experiencing it.
Well, you know, when I left Spain, I was broke financially because I was not making ends meet. I mean, we would run out of cash. My friends and I would run out of cash every single month and literally have breakfast, lunch, and dinner of buttered noodles. And it was comical. Like, we'd be boiling water in the morning because all we had in the house to eat was noodles and butter. So, and salt, of course. It's still delicious to this day. But so I needed to get home because I needed to figure out, you know, how to make a little more money. And when my plan was, when I got home in August of 04, that I would get back to bartending and actually save enough money to move to Brazil in the spring because their school year starts in March. And I had become fluent in Spanish. So I was thinking at this point, I could probably easily learn Portuguese. And the crazy thing that happened was I met my husband the day I got off the plane at the Philadelphia Phillies baseball stadium, actually. My brother-in-law was running, he was managing this huge restaurant bar there. And my brother-in-law was working, or my husband was working there. And I went straight there with my family. And then the next day, within a few days, I got a phone call from a local school hearing that I had just moved home from Spain, asking me to be a Spanish teacher. And I said, sure. And then I took the job. And then I was like, oh, shoot. I just got myself stuck in Philadelphia until the end of the school year. So that wasn't really going according to plan, you know. And that's when I started up. I was thinking about getting a master's in translation and interpretation. My husband and I started dating. And then the following summer, we had the opportunity to move to Denver to open a bar for my brother-in-law. And I thought I have to get out of Philadelphia. No offense to everyone in Philly. I love Philadelphia, but I needed to get back to the sunshine. So we moved to Colorado on a whim for 3 months in 05. And the rest is history. Wow. We've been here ever since. And so, no, I didn't really think much about much. I was kind of like, I've always been sort of a, you know, spontaneous free spirit, if you will. And the interesting thing about all of this early journey as it relates to where I am today in my life is that I had very low money mindset. I really had these stories in my brain of, you know, I only need so much to get by. And as long as I get, you know, have this much, I'll be fine. And that was okay until I fell into the mortgage business in 06. And I thought that the life of the 100% commission, the self-employed salesperson, was going to be the life of the footloose and fancy free. And so I took that leap and went 100% commission thinking this is going to be great. I'm going to have all this flexibility, and promptly fell flat on my face. So I had a lot of work to do in the early years around that money mindset piece, because I don't know, I had a negative relationship with money, probably due to some things in my childhood, but I wasn't really prioritizing financial independence until I was totally upside down and financially rock bottom. So, you know, it's kind of a backwards route. It wasn't ever really chasing the abundance until I was in desperation, right? And then, you know, things have evolved since then to improve the money mindset and then hopefully help others do the same.
If you don't mind exploring this money mindset and relationship with money with me, I think there's going to be a lot of people that either are aware that they have an issue with that as well, or they've gotten over it or are working through it like me. I think I have definitely a relationship with money that's not super healthy, but getting better. Jamie Gruber, our mutual friend, recommended a book to me where I forgot the name of it. You probably know it, but money speaks to you, like as an entity, as a person, as, in terms of like, this is what you do to me. This is how you make me feel. Like, and you're supposed to write a letter back to money as if it's a person to kind of build this relationship on a psychological level and break those barriers down, whatever you may have. And so what's some of the work or continuous work that you do to have a healthy relationship with money? And do you recall any of the issues that may have stemmed from?
Yeah. So it was interesting. In my upbringing, there were times of great abundance. And then when the markets would crash, it was like everything just vanished immediately. And so I was in fourth grade when the market crashed the first time that I remember. And I'm talking the stock market. And I think that was 88 or 89. And my dad was actually they were in the middle of building their dream home. And we were living in a perfectly acceptable, fantastic house for a family of, you know, five kids and mom and dad in the neighborhood filled with kids, swimming pool in the backyard. I mean, it was a great house and we could ride our bikes everywhere. And they were building their dream home, which was a much bigger house out on acreage and, you know, not riding bikes to friends' houses. It was a drive away, not very far. In hindsight, it wasn't very far, but it was, you know, far for a 10-year-old. And so that was the first time that happened. And then in 08, 09, it was really detrimental again. So when the stock market crashed. And so I think that's what formed this resentment I had around, you know, why did we do this? Why did we bother? We were fine where we were. So it kind of affected my ability to be ambitious in that arena and this negative connotation. And thing is, you know, I heard one time many, many years ago after I hired my first coach in 09 out of desperation, they did a personality profile test. And I think this is really interesting because one of the results of the test, and it was proprietary to the company, was around your relationship with money being tangible versus intangible. And if you're someone for whom money is tangible, you have an emotional relationship with money. When things are going well and money's coming in, you feel safer, stronger, more powerful, happier, really. And when your savings starts to go down or you start building up credit card debt, it's debilitating to the point of paralyzing. Like where if someone has an intangible relationship with money, you kind of have sayings like money's just a means to an end. I could always make more money, et cetera. And so in one of my workshops, I teach lifestyle and business planning for real estate professionals. And one of the things we talk about is that when you understand your relationship with money, and you could be somewhere on the spectrum, it's not necessarily one or the other, but if you're heavily tangible versus heavily intangible, then when you set your goals for yourself, knowing where you are on that spectrum should help you determine how to write goals. Because if you have an intangible relationship with money and you say, I want to double my income next year, I want to make $500,000, unfortunately, it won't necessarily activate new behavior because you don't have a true emotional relationship with that outcome. You don't feel anything. So you could say, yeah, I'd love to make $1 million, but it's not actually triggering any kind of response mechanism within you to change your behaviors because you don't really truly care necessarily. So in that regard, when we identify people with intangible relationship with money, what we suggest is thinking of the greatest experiences of your life and then the bucket list experiences you'd like to have. And then knowing the numbers, you still need to know the numbers, but make your future, your vision, your goals anchored in the experiences that money can afford you, and then back into the numbers from there. So if you want to take a month off and travel Europe, or you want to do 2 weeks in Hawaii, or you want to, whatever it is, right? Then if that's the experience that's going to motivate you to create new actions, you know, new behaviors, new habits, to create new outcomes financially, then that's the way we want to motivate you. We want to motivate you with the thing that is true for you. So that's one piece of it. That was in 09. But the other thing is that we were talking before we started recording, I was given the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad as soon as I went 100% commission in the mortgage business by my manager. And he said, congratulations, you know, you're now moving. And I can't remember if it was cash flow quadrant or if he mentioned this in Rich Dad, Poor Dad as well, but the quadrants of you just moved from E to S, from employee to self-employed. And he said, now I want to help you figure out how to get to B and I, business owner, where your business makes money for you, and I, investor, where your money makes money for you. And so that was the first book. And then after many years of really coming to an understanding that I was plateauing myself financially because of my limiting beliefs, and I was on this roller coaster of kind of make money, lose money, make money, lose money. And I felt like there was a pattern there, and it was reflective of what I had experienced growing up. So I read the book Secrets of the Millionaire Mind.
No.
Have you read that one?
No.
By T. Harv Eker. So that's a really good one. Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. For anyone who has stories, limiting beliefs that are probably holding you back from financial abundance, I read that easily 5 times. Like, I highlighted it and read it over and over and over again until I was able to start to reprogram the thoughts and beliefs that would lead to new behaviors and habits. And then since then, I mean, I love the book Happy Money is a great one by Ken Honda. Money and the Law of Attraction is great. So yes, I would say lots of work. I mean, that first book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, was the beginning of me being a voracious learner, reader. And, you know, people used to make fun of me for all the self-help books on my shelves. But I look at these books on my shelves now as my teachers, as my, you know, I didn't get my master's degree. So it's in these books. It's in the coaches I've hired. It's in the trainings I've attended and the seminars and, you know, the organizations we're a part of, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, never stop learning, never stop, you know, being honest with myself around where I'm playing small and then seeking those people that remind me of the future I want to have and hanging around them, learning from them,
etc. Thank you for highlighting something that I haven't really recognized. And I'm listening to you and I'm like, oh yeah, maybe that's why my relationship with money isn't as good as it could be. You know, I've the books that I read, you know, business, sales, marketing, mindset. But I do stay away from like the psychology of money type of books. Everything you mentioned, you know, I mean, I think the red pill for me was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cash Flow Quadrant, those books. And then I stopped reading those types of books because I was like, got it. And then I go and build something that's generating income, have the investments, getting passive, doing all the things. But then my relationship with money is still twisted, right? I'm like, I'm making money, but yeah, you're right. I need to go back to the teachers and just get my learn on, so to speak. So I'm curious your take, and I know this is an integral part because I know it is for me as well. Like your partner, your husband, your wife in this whole grand scheme and plan of things, how important is that you guys, A, like both agreed? How quickly was that to go from Philly to Denver? Like, let's do it. And just on the same page for all things, you know, can you talk about that a bit?
Well, that's a funny story because I got to Denver and there was a lot of similarities to what I had experienced in Barcelona, believe it or not, 300 days of sunshine, a melting pot of a lot of different people from all over, you know, meeting people from wherever. And I was there, I don't know, 48 hours. And I thought to myself, well, I guess this is the end for Tony and me. Because we were supposed to be there for 3 months and he is such a Philly guy. And I thought for sure he was going to want to go back to Philadelphia. And that meant we were going to have to break up because there was no way I was going back. And then we were there 5 days and he says to me, this is going to sound really strange. He's like, because I've never been to Colorado and I've only been here 5 days. But for some reason, I feel like it was where I was always meant to be. And I was like, oh, phew, because I really like you. And I didn't really want to break up with you. So, and then, so we stayed in Denver for a long time. And then in 2015, well, you know, we started buying and holding real estate and we were lucky because we bought our first place in 2008 and we became accidental landlords in 2010 when we kept our first place. And I always joke that was the best accident that ever happened. We never really planned on that. It just kind of fell into place like that. And then that passive income was pretty significant. And it became something I was passionate about teaching my mortgage clients. And then we did it again. So on our third house, we moved one block over. They were all in the same neighborhood. So 2008, 2010, 2012 in Denver, as you can imagine, that was a lucky time to be buying real estate in hindsight. And then in 2015, we bought our first condo in the mountains in Winter Park, Colorado. And we were lucky again. We were ahead of the curve on that as well. Bought our first condo for $195,000. And it was a 70s time capsule with wooden toilet seats, but it was perfect for us. So we were here every weekend. And I remember after about, I don't know, 5 or 6 months of being here every weekend, that first winter, we were out for dinner having sushi one night in Denver. And Tony said something about how much he loves being in Winter Park. And we both felt called to the mountains. He's not even a skier. We just love the mountains. We camp a lot and we just love being in the woods, really. And he said something to the effect of moving there someday when the kids grow up, like when we retire. And I thought about it, and our oldest was in kindergarten at the time. And I thought to myself, you know, nobody has a crystal ball. Nobody knows how long we've got here. I personally have experienced a lot of tragic loss in my life, loved ones, friends, et cetera. And I thought, why not now? You know, so we went through all the reasons why we couldn't or shouldn't. And we couldn't come up with any one good reason because the worst case scenario was just go back to where we were. And that's when we started our journey of short-term rentals, because at the time we were able to short-term rent our house in Denver. And it ended up doubling Tony's income. So I said, well, this is silly. You should quit your job and let's live the life of our dreams now. And so we retired him thanks to our real estate investments back in 2016 and moved full time to the ski town. And since then, you know, he has a lower risk tolerance than me. I think because I've failed so many times and I'm still here, my risk tolerance is higher in the sense of the worst case scenario never really happens. It doesn't matter how many times I fall on my face, I still somehow get back up again. And then I'm better for it, I guess. And so he would be more resistant of the big leaps as we have gone along. But then we just kind of experiment. I guess that's what it boils down to, is that sometimes when your spouse and you are not on the same page, you just have to sometimes say, let's lighten up a little bit here. Let's not take it too seriously. This is just a game of life. Let's just try it. And let's see, what's the worst case scenario? We come back to where we are right now, whatever that means in your life. And we're never really going to be homeless. There's a lot of people that like us enough to give us their basement or something. So let's just try. And then his risk tolerance has expanded with the journey. I think it was Mel Robbins. I saw her on Instagram not too long ago. She said something like, you don't wait for confidence to take action. You take action and your confidence builds. And I would say that would be very true for Tony and I, that even if he wasn't certain, I probably was loud enough to say, let's do it. What's the worst that could happen? And then he just succumbs. until we prove that, and then the confidence builds. But there's been a lot of that. So nowadays, you know, real estate investing is what is kind of his primary responsibility, is managing our rentals. And then I have been doing what I've been doing with building my mortgage business and then the podcast and then the coaching business, et cetera. So yeah, but it's tricky. I mean, it's typical, I would say, that two partners aren't necessarily exactly the same with their risk tolerance or their dreams or ambitions. And so it's just a lot of communication and trial and error.
Yeah. I mean, you said one key word there in communication, right? Because, I mean, typically, I've seen it fail time and time again, but I'm sure there's many examples that I can't think of where it worked. Two personality types were, made it work in terms of a marriage and partnership, you know, like two extroverts or two introverts or, yeah, I'm sure. But you're right, the balance there, where one person can check the other, the yin and the yang. It's funny to hear you say you're the risk, you're the risk taker, and Tony's the more averse. But it makes total sense now, hearing your story and your background and everything you've created. Let's get into, and I love that quote, by the way, the Mel Robbins one. It's so true. It's so true. To don't wait for confidence. You know, basically, you'll build that confidence along the way. Let's get into maybe a story or an idea that you could share around embracing the F word, meaning failure. So, was there something that you did in the past that you're like, man, that was a major screw up, or that really hurt, or took us back a few steps, but we learned this from it?
This, yes, many. But I'll pick the funniest one. Also painful, but now in hindsight, pretty funny. I as I mentioned earlier, I went 100% commission in 07, thinking that self-employment is the freedom and flexibility. And within a year, I was $35,000 in credit card debt, maxed on all my credit cards. I hated sales. I mean, there are still traditional antiquated sales strategies that are just simply too dreadful for me. And I've never done them and I never will. And it's not what I teach people to do. But unfortunately, I was struggling as a result of not applying maybe what I should have been doing when I was being mentored because of my fear, you know, my insecurity around what people would think of me, fear of being seen as salesy, the common fears that people have. So here I was, the summer of 2008, we're about to get married in a month. And I am maxed on all my credit cards and I get a referral for a new client and I'm meeting him at a Starbucks 5 miles from my house in July. So I had to ride my bike to the client meeting because I didn't have enough money for gas.
Wow.
And I had to think about what I could wear that would look professional back in the days of me still imposter syndrome, wearing the female suit and, you know, sitting at the big mahogany desk. So trying to figure out what to wear and then getting there 30 minutes early so I can let the sweat dry off before he gets there. So he doesn't know the truth. And then unfortunately, the client gets there early as well. And he walks up to me at the counter at Starbucks as my credit card is being declined for a $2 cup of coffee.
Wow.
Yes. The worst part was that's the one that I thought could cover the coffee. So I didn't know what to do because if I tried another card and it also got declined, the gig was up.
Wow.
So I just lied and said, that's so weird. That's my debit card. I'm going to have to call the bank. And the client bought my cup of coffee and I was mortified to say the least. And I remember calling my dad and I will say, you know, I share that story about the financial impact of things back in the day, but what the gift that my dad gave all five of us was the belief that we could do anything we set our mind to. And I think that was an incredible gift. He always encouraged us that you only live once and go for it and never discouraged us from following our dreams, which is why they didn't hold me back from gallivanting the planet when I first graduated college. But here, I just called him for advice and I said, I don't know how you did this because he had graduated college, became an engineer for a while, and then he went 100% commission as a stockbroker in his 20s. So I was like, how do you do this? This is impossible. I'm failing. I'm broke. This is so much harder than I thought. And he said, well, do you think that you'll be good at this someday? And I said, I think I could be. And he said, then you do whatever it takes. And he gave me some good advice. And a few days later, there was a check in the mail to cover my electric bill. And he said, pay me back when you can. And I did. But that was the extent of the help that I received. I mean, I just took the advice, do whatever it takes. And at the time, I opened another credit card. I bought internet leads, whatever that means, in 2008. And I actually hired my first business coach. And it was a turning point in my life. I've never been without a coach or a mentor since. And most people wouldn't do that. They would say, well, I can't afford a coach, you know? And my response to that is I couldn't afford not to. I was desperate. And over the years, there have been other moments that have been hard, but going back to that always reminds me that you can always turn that ship around. And here I was, you know, I went into the mortgage business in 2007 like a genius, you know, not knowing what was on the horizon. So I was building my business while others were crumbling. You know, as the real estate market was crashing in 08, 09, I had nothing to lose. I mean, I was literally coming from a negative space. So I only had one way to go but up. And I think that was also a gift to have that perspective of I've got nothing to lose. And so here we are recording this in October of 2023. This is a challenging time in the real estate industry for mortgage lenders and real estate agents. And I always want to encourage people to not compare to what was, but compare to what is and just move forward from here. This is a clean slate. Every day is New Year's Day, as far as I'm concerned. Any day is a day to begin anew and to decide what you want to create for your future in spite of your past. I read The Miracle Morning many times by Hal Elrod. And one of my favorite quotes from that book is one of his affirmations that where I am is a result of who I've been and where I go depends entirely on who I choose to be starting today. And the powerful words there are choose and starting today. So it's okay. Like it is always okay. No matter what is going on, you're okay because you're here, you're alive, and you have the freedom of choice to decide in spite of my circumstances, in spite of what I can't control, in spite of my childhood, in spite of the job I have today, what do I really want out of this life? And it's not a matter of whether you can, it's just a matter of whether you're willing. Are you willing to say out loud, I want that, even when you don't know how, and then go for it? And that's what empowers me every time I fail. Because I've failed many times since, I've made tons of mistakes, and you fail forward, you learn from the mistakes. And the reality is, even if you stay put exactly where you are, if you're not comfortable where you are, if you don't feel aligned with the life you're living right now, if you have a hope and a dream for something better for yourself, which I think we always do, I think we're wired to expand and grow and improve and learn and all these things. And that's where the thrill of life is. So I think that if you're feeling stuck and you're wishing for something different, I would encourage you to think that on the other side of the chances that you take, you often find they were smart decisions. And that you weren't better off playing small, and that you're not better off convincing yourself to not try because of the fear that it might not work out or what people might think of you. So, you know, that was a major failure, a major F-bomb for me, but not the last one. And so it's just there to remind you, keep going, you know?
Thanks for sharing. I love your healthy relationship with failure. I'll make a blanket statement, you know, for listeners, but for myself mainly, and that I grew up with the opposite, right? It was like, failure is not an option. And hence why I do have this mug, which is the mantra of, for those who can't see and listening, failure is success and progress. I had to constantly bombard myself and reprogram. I think my father grew up with like watching the moon landing and, you know, yes, failure is not an option because it meant death if you failed. But for us as entrepreneurs, especially in the entrepreneurial space, it's like, this is how we figure shit out. You know, we like, and for you though, kudos to you for, and really to your father as well, for instilling that mantra of like, take risks, fail as you go and learn as you go. Because now you have this super high risk tolerance and a healthy relationship with failure. How are you working? And this is where I want to get into sort of like really cool stuff before we go. Is like, how are you imparting this knowledge to your children? Because like I'm like, I got to figure this out. Like,
You know, some of the things that we say to the kids, you know, a big one for me is like, number one, just every time you say you can't do something, you've made a decision. So if my kid, I mean, I remember the first time we got his ski pass and signed him up for ski lessons, which was expensive.
Yeah.
And he was having a meltdown. He was not going to ski. I can't ski, et cetera. And I was like, you can't is a decision. So instead say, how can I? Change the language to from I can't to how can I? Because I can't closes the valve, right? How can I opens the valve? And we're not at a point yet with their ages. I mean, my son is 13. He's a typical adolescent. My daughter's 10. She's a bright light who has huge hopes and dreams and a bucket list already. She's just a big dreamer. So with her, it's like, let's not ever try. We have to try our hardest to not extinguish the light that is already shining bright within her. Right. But the other thing is that I take a lot of the language from the books that I read. One of the sayings is expect nothing, accept everything. And what that means is not to say that expect nothing of yourself, but oftentimes our happiness and our emotions are dependent upon the behavior and emotions of others. Like, we set expectations for others to meet our needs for us to be okay. And when it doesn't happen, we create our own suffering. So when they have arguments or meltdowns because one of them wants something and they're not getting what they want, et cetera, I'm saying, like, don't need something from others for you to be okay and be happy. Because I use this image of a light within us. We all have a light within us. The light is on when you're laughing, when you're having fun, when you're excited, when you're just really feeling great, having a good time, right? And the light is out, or it's dim, when people let you down, when you're in fear, when you're feeling worry, doubt, insecurity, exhaustion, overwhelm, burnout. So on any given day, our lights can go on and off many times throughout the day, right? You might get up in the morning and prime yourself to feel great today, and then you have a disagreement with somebody or a hard conversation with a client, and it takes the wind out of your sails. The light gets dim, it's out, right? In any area of our life, it's difficult to create transformation, to move towards our goals from a dim light. Like, if you don't think you can, or you are worried it won't work out, or you're just feeling, frankly, burned out or overwhelmed or frustrated, it's very challenging then to take the action you need to move to the next best thing, the next right step. So it's really just about helping them have the control switch of the dimmer within them. Like, how do you control the light within you? Because when you can get your lights on, when you know what turns your light on by, you know, for me, it's if I'm feeling low, if I just had a tough day, if somebody took the wind out of my sails, I'm going to go get into nature. And that always turns the lights on for me. So before I do the next important interaction in my day, I'm going to address the light within me. I'm not going to try to give from an empty well. And I did for many years. I ran on fumes for years, overwhelmed, overconnected, overscheduled, burning out. And it's like, that's not freedom and flexibility either. That was kind of a tangent. You asked me about my kids and it kind of led into something different. But I guess, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I'd like to instill that in them as well. I know so many of our colleagues put a lot of effort and attention on, you know, helping their kids become entrepreneurs as they're young and stuff. I'm of the mindset right now, just let them be kids, let them have fun. I mean, they're playing. We invest in real estate. We did a 6-month RV road trip during COVID and homeschooled our kids and started buying out of state investment properties and things like that. So I think there's a lot happening by osmosis because of the conversations that we're a part of. They kind of make fun of us because we're always talking about real estate. So I think somehow we're instilling stuff in them without it being too formal at the moment.
Yeah, you're so, so right. My mom and my parents were not investors. They were always struggling with money growing up. The one thing through osmosis I recognized and I adopted was my mom's work ethic. Like, she would work like a dog. Like, she was the hustler. Like, my dad, he was a good salesman. He was a good people person. So I was able to sort of absorb some of that. But yeah, you're right. No matter what, you don't realize sometimes that you are influencing your kids just from your actions. So you could speak and say and do, and try to teach them lessons. But if they're watching you, that's where they're learning, right? If they're doing anything, it's like that's the stuff they're absorbing and going to adapt into their character. But yeah, thanks for sharing that. Man, so much to unpack. I know little time, and we start a little late. So apologies, but yeah, I'm excited to continue our conversation on other channels, sharing with our micro tribes. We both have our own little tribes within GoBundance. So I want to also let the audience know to check out your podcast, Pursuing Freedom, which I highly recommend you go check out and hear more of Aaron. Before we go though, Aaron, in one word, how do you help people?
The one word is limitless.
Love it.
Do you want to know what that means?
I absolutely do. I get so, it. It makes sense. But yeah, let's expand.
Well, okay. Something that I learned that I like to impart with others is that if any one of us goes back to the 20-year-old version of ourselves or teenage version, let's just say in our early 20s, right? In some area of your life, whether it's your health, like maybe you've done a marathon or you've ridden a bike race or you've climbed a mountain or whatever, or maybe it's the relationship, the loves that you have in your life, or maybe it's the career or the achievements, business, financial, or giving back, philanthropy, whatever it is that you've done in your adult life, there's something there that you did not know was possible when you were 20. You did not believe, if you went back to your younger version of yourself, I guarantee you, you had limits on what you believed to be true about yourself and where you were headed, and that you've exceeded your own expectations in some area of your life and business. And because of that being true, it's the evidence that none of us have any idea what we're truly capable of, that every single one of us has limited belief around what we imagine to be possible, and it's limited by the experience we've lived to date. And so it makes it really hard for people to dream beyond what their current reality might be and to settle for what they've got and to make excuses for why they have to, or they should, or they can't, or they could never. And it's all BS, because we've already proven we've been able to exceed our own expectations, which means that this is a game we've only scratched the surface. So I love helping people believe in and achieve the limitless.
And I love that you lead by example, you know, not just with your kids, but with your clients. They see you, you know, walking, talking the talk and walking the walk. How much, I'm really curious, and I know this is typically like, okay, how do people reach out to you? Before we get people to, well, share with people how people can reach out to you. I have one more question around that. But yeah, what's the best way people can reach out to you?
I would say the easiest way is to get in touch with me on Instagram at Pursuing Freedom Official. I answer the DMs. I'm on there. Or email me, Erin@pursuingfreedom.com. You can check out pursuingfreedom.com. There's a lot of free resources there, masterclasses and things like that to help with mindset and belief and action taking and goal setting and all the things. So I love talking to people. I'm an open book, and I love being a resource however I can. So please don't hesitate to reach out.
Yeah, you answered my question, so we don't have to go there. But the question was around, and thank you for that. I highly recommend you go check out Erin and have her in your world. She's truly a great human. It's really unpacking that mindset. Like, I think that is the biggest issue that a lot of people have in terms of taking action. There's something that has to be unpacked, something that needs to be healed, some trauma that needs to be addressed. And, you know, as I address those things throughout my life, I find that I get to the next version and just get better and better. But a lot of people don't want to put that work in, right? Because it's scary. And I'm sure you deal a lot with that and unpacking people's junk. So
it's
thank
the number
you for
one
that.
Thing. Yeah. It's the number one thing. And the problem is the work never ends. Mm. We don't arrive. There's no finish line. There's no human being that doesn't experience fear, exhaustion, overwhelm, insecurity, doubt. It's part of the human experience. And I always joke, if you experience those things, you're not special. You're not special. You're just human. So it's like, don't think anybody you admire isn't still grappling with mindset issues. It's the work never ends, and you can't get it wrong. You can't get it right. It's just keep going, you know?
Yeah.
But why not? We also only have one shot. Why not make it amazing? So take the risks, because on the other side of risk, you usually look back and you think that was the best decision I ever made. But it doesn't mean it's not scary. It's terrifying. Mm-hmm. Do it anyway.
Yeah. I love the point that you made. And then we will land this bird together is, you know, I'll go to a Tony Robbins event, right? And you know, I'm there to seek guidance and to enlightenment and, you know, get to the next level and, you know, of success or whatever that means for me. And I see celebrities there that are looking for the same thing, you know, and I'm like, but they're up front. They're a lot closer to the stage than I am. But I'm like, yeah, you're right. Absolutely, Erin. And that people, you know, you could look up to people, but everybody's looking for answers and help and guidance to be better. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Well, folks, check out Erin and her show. Like I said, Pursuing Freedom. Highly recommend you reach out to her. Find her on Instagram. What was your handle again?
@PursuingFreedomOfficial.
Awesome. At Pursuing Freedom Official. And thanks again so much. I'm looking forward to our next conversation.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K, at onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests, or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.